From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Well, happy 2025, everyone. Can you believe it's already a new year? I'm hoping you have some good New Year's resolutions. And with me, I'm always, for each and every year, I'm always looking to see which places that I can visit to enrich my faith and perhaps create television shows. I'll be looking at some new shrines in this new year and hoping to film some related to the Hidden Gems series. That's a new program we have coming out on EWTN, which looks at Catholic shrines all across the United States. And we feature them in half-hour programs on EWTN. And we filmed something like 10 of them in 2024. So I'm hoping 2025 brings some new shrines to the series as well. And for people who are looking to see shrines internationally, you can join me on a pilgrimage. I'll be going for the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati. And that's going to be in August of next year, July through August. People can go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter to sign up. We're going to be going to Milan, Florence, Rome, Turin to see the Cathedral, the Shroud of Turin there. And so, it should be an amazing pilgrimage, culminating, of course, in that canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati, that popular Italian saint that everybody's been so excited about. And we'll be doing that at the end of July of next year. People can sign up at pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. But back to the American shrines, we're going to be looking at two American shrines today. We're going to be looking at the Shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton. And, of course, today is her feast day, so it's a perfect day to talk with Rob Judge, the executive director of that National Shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton. We'll also be talking to the executive director, Catherine Pittman Smith, of the National Votive Shrine of Our Lady of Prompt Succor. It is a place of miracles and wonder, and you can go there, and it's a truly beautiful older shrine, and we filmed an episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter there. We'll be talking with that executive director later in the program to tell you about some of the great miracle stories that surround that devotion there. Check out my series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Central Time, and this week, on January 8th, we've got They Might Be Saints, Rhoda Wise. In Canton, Ohio, Rhoda Wise was well known as a mystic with many spiritual gifts and healing miracles, and one of them was experienced by Rita Rizzo, the future Mother Angelica. I'll be relating her remarkable story, and again, that's on Wednesday, January 8th at 8 a.m. Central Time. Check out my other program, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs every Saturday and airing today at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. I go to Paris. I'll be traveling to the City of Light, where the Virgin of Mary appeared to St. Catherine Laboure in the year 1830, resulting in the most famous and widespread Catholic medal in circulation, the Miraculous Medal. So check that one out, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Paris. That's tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And later in the show, we're going to be looking at the might-be saint of the day. That's Blessed Thomas Plumtree, a martyr from England who died in 1570. The 365 Days with Mary project for today, January 4th, we've got Our Lady of the Rose from Albano Sant'Alessandro in Italy in the year 1417. And the question of the week, have any apparitions occurred on Christmas Day? I'll try to answer that one. And the miracle of the day, in 1989, there was a Marian apparition in San Nicolas, Argentina. I'll tell you about that one later in the show. Let's take a look at miracle news. We do this every week, where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And this is perhaps the greatest miracle that's happened in the last 500 years. And of course, I'm referring to Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico City. And traditionally, we have the date of 1531 as being the date when Mary appeared to St. Juan Diego on December 9th and culminating in a final apparition on December 12th. But there's a new project called Project Guadalupe 2031 that will be celebrating the 500th anniversary of that miracle. So absolutely amazing. So they're getting ready in Mexico and all over the Americas to celebrate the patroness of the Americas, Our Lady of Guadalupe. And so the Diocese of Lincoln is joining a dozen churches and answering Pope Francis's 2022 call to prepare for the 500th anniversary of the apparition of Our Lady of Guadalupe in 2031. and they'll be celebrating in style. And so this diocese will take part in a series of 12 Masses that will take place nationwide in the year of the Jubilee. And the series of celebrations are part of Project Guadalupe 2031, initiative of Archbishop Cordeleone of the Archdiocese of San Francisco in partnership with the Benedict XVI Institute. Now, according to the press release from the Diocese of Lincoln, this Project Guadalupe 2031 is a new multi-year initiative to inspire more U.S. Catholics to answer Pope Francis's call. Quote, "I urge all members of the Pilgrim Church in the Americas, pastors and faithful," Pope Francis said, "to participate in this celebratory journey that aims to promote an encounter with God through Our Lady of Guadalupe for the renewal of the social and ecclesial fabric of these peoples and communities," end quote. In the announcement, it was noted that the appearance of the Blessed Mother to a, quote, poor indigenous farmer in the Tepeyac was the point at which Christianity was birthed in the Americas, and expressed his hope that all Christians, and especially Catholics, would join us in preparing to welcome Mary into our hearts and homes. And to this end, a series of 12 Masses will be held during the Jubilee of Hope, with stops already scheduled in California, Texas, Virginia, Wisconsin, and Nebraska. In addition, Archbishop Cordeleone will also preside over a special Mass at the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico, built at that very spot where Mary appeared to St. Juan Diego in 1531. I'm going to post that link to the Miracle Hunter Facebook page so you can find out more about this Project Guadalupe 2031, celebrating my favorite of all Marian devotions. So check that one out. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week. We ask a trivia question, give out a prize to an emailer that writes in with the fastest answer. And I personally love pub trivia. You might find me in a bar on some random night playing trivia, but this is Catholic Pub Trivia. And so last week, we asked a football question for all the football fans out there. Who was the last Catholic university to win college football's national championship? And I didn't specify at what division level. I should have done that. Of course, there are only two Division I football programs. That's Notre Dame and Holy Cross. And I don't think Holy Cross has ever won. So Notre Dame, of course, was the answer. 1988, the AP national title went to Notre Dame. I think they're probably trying again for all these years later to win it again. But Notre Dame was the answer. But for those people not looking at the highest levels of college football and perhaps looking in the FCS, the football championship subdivision, actually in 2009, the Villanova Wildcats football program, representing Villanova University, of course, were the winners of the championship in football. So we would have taken either answer, Notre Dame or Villanova, depending on the division that you were specifying. So here's the question for this week. We talk a lot about martyrs on this program. The question is, what $50 million shrine opened last year honors a martyr? Again, so that question is, what $50 million shrine, which opened last year, honors a martyr? And if you think you know that answer, when to win the prize of the Faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or questions@miraclehunter.com. You can send me a message that way, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking to Catherine Pittman Smith, the Executive Director of the National Votive Shrine of Our Lady of Prom Succor. Stay with us for that.
Listening to EWTN Radio.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We're so excited to talk about miracles happening here in the United States. Perhaps there aren't that many that have been recognized by church authorities, but there are some that have some sort of traditional level of approval, you might say, where over the years we've seen great devotion that has sprung from great miracle stories that have happened even here on our American soil. And one of those places is in New Orleans, and I was just there a few years ago now to the Shrine of Our Lady of Prom Succor, the National Votive Shrine of Our Lady of Prom Succor, to be exact. and in New Orleans, and it's an absolutely beautiful older chapel, older devotion here in the United States that not many people here are familiar with. Well, we're so excited to be joined today on this program by the executive director of the Shrine of Our Lady of Prompt Succor, and that is Keke Pittman Smith. Welcome to the show today, Keke.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I'm so excited to have you on here. And of course, we have the feast day coming up related to Our Lady of Prompt Succor, that being January 8th, celebrated in New Orleans and by devotees all around the country. But for many people, they do not know this title of Our Lady of Prompt Succor. What does it mean anyway? This is perhaps a phrase that most Americans wouldn't even know how to make sense of it. What is Our Lady of Prompt Succor?
So Our Lady of Prompt Succor is Our Lady of Quick Help, and it is pronounced multiple ways, Prompt Succor, which is the French original version, but we have in America have changed that, many of us, to Prompt Succor.
And where does this devotion come from? Of course, we see this as an older phrase, perhaps, but where does the term Prompt Succor come from anyway? What's the origins of this devotion in the United States?
So the origin is actually started in France. Sister St. Michelle Jeansoul, Order of St. Ursula, requested of her bishop to leave France and come to Louisiana to serve in the Ursuline Convent in Louisiana. And her bishop, this is in the early 1800s, near the end of the Napoleonic era, and she requested, and he denied that request and told her that she would only be able to leave France if she received the permission and approval of the Pope, who was still imprisoned in Rome by Napoleon. So she set about her life praying for guidance from Our Lady, and said that to Our Lady that if she received a quick and favorable response from the Pope, she would have a statue carved, bring it to Louisiana, to this convent, and develop a devotion in Louisiana and the United States under the title of Our Lady of Prompt Succor or Quick Help, Our Lady of Quick Help. So within 30 days in the early 1800s, 1810, over four, she received that response from the Pope in less than 30 days, which is seemingly quick for given all the circumstances. Not only did the Pope receive her request, but he sent a response back, and she was able then to get the approval of her bishop, have the statue carved, and the statue arrived here on December 31st, I believe, 1809. And then in 1810, December 31st, 1810, sorry. And that is the start of the devotion in the city of New Orleans at the Ursuline Convent.
Amazing. And even today, when we see the in an impending hurricane, which might hit your area more than other places in the country, you see people praying to Our Lady of Prompt Succor or for the health and well-being of the city. You see her as sort of the patroness of the city. And we've seen numerous cases. I think you're captured in sort of the lore and the history related to the shrine there and of New Orleans itself. We hear of sort of Our Lady of Prompt Succor interceding in the saving of a fire, of the city from a fire, or perhaps in the Battle of New Orleans. Talk about sort of the miracle connection to this devotion of Our Lady of Prompt Succor.
So the people of the city came to pray in the Ursuline Chapel and now the Shrine of Our Lady for any intention, small or large. So there are so many, even small ones that people tell us about, as well as large ones. The largest, I would say, and most well-known maybe, is the request on December 23rd. Andrew Jackson came to the sisters and the Bishop of New Orleans at the time in 1814, not long after the statue had arrived. The he came to the bishop and sisters and requested that they pray, please, for the safety of the city, and that he would do his best to protect the city. But the British had come and were going to go to battle at the Battle of New Orleans in January, and that they had plundered much of the East Coast in their way during the War of 1812 and were headed to the city. And the army of the Americans were outnumbered and outgunned. And so the sisters and the bishop, the church was constantly filled with pious citizens, mostly women. Obviously, the men were elsewhere praying. And on January 7th, they could hear the battle. They could hear the cannons. They could hear the guns from the convent. And on January 8th in the morning, the bishop started a mass. And the sisters vowed that if the Americans were successful in their victory, they would have an annual mass of thanksgiving for the city and citizens being saved from defeat. And so on January 8th, during mass at the time of Holy Communion, a messenger from the battlefield entered the church and announced that victory had been swift and the Americans had defeated the British. And so they began the mass of thanksgiving, sang the Te Deum, which is a hymn of thanksgiving in the Catholic Church. And we now will celebrate our 210th anniversary of this mass of thanksgiving on January 8th at 4 p.m. in the shrine.
Wonderful. I was just going to ask you that, how, with the feast day coming up right around the corner, how are things celebrated even to today's date in commemoration of some of the big events that have occurred in the past? And it seems to me that the devotion is alive and well and still celebrated annually.
Yes, it is celebrated annually. It is our the feast of Our Lady of Prompt Tucker isn't tied to when she arrived. Really, it is tied to what is known as maybe the biggest and the massive thanksgiving associated with her intercession on behalf of all the people who prayed.
Wonderful. And as we wrap up the interview today, if we think about the title of Our Lady of Prompt Succor and perhaps the meaning of that, an older title, still renewed each and every year, still recognized every year, still important to the people of New Orleans and beyond, what can we see as the meaning of that Marian title for the people of New Orleans and beyond?
I think that the title is, and the place of worship is a place where people can come for pilgrimage and to feel hope in their lives. And as I say that, I will say that we are a site listed for 2025 as a place of pilgrimage in the city and in the United States for the Jubilee Year of Pilgrims of Hope. And so I think our regular mission of hope and welcome for all is directly tied to this Jubilee Year.
Wonderful. And we're so grateful to you, Kaki Pittman-Smith, the Executive Director of the National Shrine of Our Lady of Prompt Succor in New Orleans, Louisiana. And for people who want to find out more about this devotion or how to visit your shrine, what's the best place that people can go?
The best place is our website, which is www.shrineolps.com. Or our Facebook page, the National Votive Shrine of Our Lady of Prompt Succor. We also have recently released a documentary related to many of the special intentions and intercession of Our Lady. It's available through the PDF website and public information. So.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Kaki Pittman-Smith, Executive Director of the National Votive Shrine of Our Lady of Prompt Succor, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
God bless. That was Kaki Pittman-Smith, the Executive Director of the National Votive Shrine of Our Lady of Prompt Succor. Check out that shrine. It's absolutely amazing. Anytime you're in New Orleans, you can go online as well. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, We're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening about in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And of course, I love getting the email questions. I might have the strangest email inbox of anybody you've ever met, but I also like answering the questions in person. Perhaps that's even more fun for me. And I like doing it when I give talks. So I speak about 20 times in different parishes or shrines or conferences, travel around the country. And I give about a 45-minute talk about Eucharistic miracles or Marian apparitions. And then I open it up to questions at the end, a question and answer session, which sometimes goes 15, 20, 30 minutes. People are pretty interested to have their questions about miracles answered. And I'm interested to see what people are thinking about. So for people who are interested in having me come to their church, you can go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and just click on the contact tab, and you can send me a message that way. So the question for this week is a good one. We have a question, dear Miracle Hunter. Have any apparitions occurred on Christmas Day? Thank you, Al. Well, thanks, Al, for your question. It's a good one. I think, of course, we assume that perhaps there are no apparitions of any sort that happen on Christmas Day. It's a day to honor Jesus and the Holy Family, and perhaps apparitions would be distracting from that. But we do have, on a few occasions, some different Marian apparitions and a very interesting story related to St. Cajetan. So on Christmas Eve in the year 1517, the Blessed Virgin Mary placed the Christ child in his arms during his first Mass in the Chapel of the Nativity. So a marble sculpture depicting St. Cajetan holding the infant Jesus identifies the spot where the saint's vision occurred in the crypt of the Chapel of the Nativity, the side chapel to the right of the main altar church of Basilica of St. Mary Major in Rome. And there's a marble sculpture depicting St. Cajetan holding the infant Jesus, identifying that very spot where it happened. And so on December 24th, 2024, on Christmas Eve, a saint experienced a mystical vision in which the Blessed Virgin Mary placed the Christ child in his arms as he offered his first Mass. Now, this little-known but profound experience of the newborn Jesus occurred within the storied walls of the Marian Basilica Chapel of the Nativity, where St. Cajetan of Thiene prayed before the relics of Christ's manger. Quote, "In the hour of the Most Holy Birth, I found myself in the true and material Most Holy Nativity," St. Cajetan wrote to Sister Laura Magnani, an Augustinian nun and his spiritual confidant. "From the hands of the timid virgin, I took that tender child, the eternal word made flesh." And so that is an amazing story that's written in his own hand that we have. And that is a vision which he said occurred again on January 1st and January 6th during the feast days in the first days of January. And it's remained a central spiritual moment for the Congregation of Clerics Regular, or Theatines, the order of priests that he co-founded. So that's the answer to your question, Al. Thanks for your question. For those people who have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me a message to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary Project. We do this every week where we ask a question, where we look at a Marian devotion from somewhere around the world that occurs in the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th, but believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion that occurs on each and every day of the calendar year. And for today's date, January 4th, we have Our Lady of the Rose from Albano San Alessandro in Italy in the year 1417. And the story goes that in the night between January 3rd and January 4th in the year 1417, two Roman merchants traveling from Bergamo to Brescia were lost in a forest near the village of Albano. Lost and fearful of dying in the cold, they turned fervently to the Lord and the vow to build a chapel if they should survive the night. Suddenly, the sky opened with rays of light breaking the darkness, and a beam of light showed them the way. With relieved and grateful hearts, they very quickly reached the city of Bergamo, and with the basilica closed at that late hour, they found shelter in the nearby ruined tower. It began to pray in the darkness, and immediately the Immaculate Virgin and the Christ Child appeared before them. And so that is Our Lady of the Rose from Albano San Alessandro in Italy in the year 1417. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can connect to the website 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book or you can download the free app 365 Days with Mary, Marian Calendar, available at in the iOS App Store. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we find the miracle from happening at some point in Christian history that lines up to the day's date. And today's date is January 4th. And so in the apparitions of San Nicolas in Argentina, and I've been there myself, we filmed there this past year, so we'll have an explore episode on that one coming soon. And during the years that were investigated and approved by the local bishop from 1983 to 1990, Our Lady gave Gladys Mota de Quiroga 1,800 messages over the course of almost 7 years. As of 2016, Gladys continues to receive messages which are examined by the bishop and theologians prior to their dissemination to the faithful. Now, there was an apparition on January 4th in 1989, and the quote from this approved Marian apparition is, "I say this to all your brethren, do not run from the Lord, go trustingly to him. It is truly time to do so, since to go toward Christ and to love him is to learn humbly how to surrender to the Lord. Through love, his truth will overcome. Meditate on it." And so that is from the approved Marian apparitions in San Nicolas in Argentina. And that is today's Miracle of the Day. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We do this every week where we look at we try to keep you up to date with those people coming down the pipeline, the sainthood pipeline anyway, to tell you who are the future saints. And so earlier this month, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, received in his audience Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Supreme Pontiff authorized the Dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the martyrdom of the servant of God, Edward Profilich of the Society of Jesus, titular Archbishop of Adrianople and the Apostolic Administrator of Estonia. He was born on September 11, 1890 in Beresdorf in Germany and died on February 2nd in 1942 in the prison of Kirpov in Russia. And according to the website for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints of the Society of Jesus, he was the titular Archbishop of Adrianople, Apostolic Administrator of Estonia, and his material martyrdom became known only many years after his tragic death following the fall of the Soviet regime. In the prison where he was taken in 1941, his health weakened due to the hardships and harsh living conditions. And that is the upcoming venerable, or upcoming blessed, I should say, venerable then blessed. Now he is blessed, Edward Profilich. And with one miracle, he will go from blessed Edward to Saint Edward. Let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day. We do this every week where we look at somebody on the path to sainthood. We're talking about servants of God, venerables, blesseds, those people before they have all their miracles recognized by Rome and are declared saints. And for today's day, January 4th, we've got Blessed Thomas Plumtree from England. He was born in Lincolnshire, England, and he began his studies at Corpus Christi College in Oxford in 1543. He was a priest and rector in Lincolnshire, England, in 1546, and he resigned and became chaplain to Northern insurgents in the Catholic Rising of the North against the repressions of Queen Elizabeth I. He refused to take the oath acknowledging her supremacy over the church in England. He was captured when the revolt failed, and he was arrested at the altar and charged with the crime of celebrating Mass. He offered his freedom if he would. He was offered freedom if he would denounce Catholicism, but he declined, and he is now a martyr. He was hanged, drawn, and quartered on January 4th, 1570, in the marketplace in Durham Castle in England, and he was left to hang as a warning to other Catholics, and he was finally buried on January 14th, 1570. In 1886, on December 9th, he was beatified by Pope Leo XIII in a confirmation of his cultus. And that is today's might-be saint of the day, Blessed Thomas Plumtree, martyr from England. With one miracle, he will become Saint Thomas Plumtree. And for people who want to find out more about They Might Be Saints, you can go to theymightbesaints.com. You can also check out my television series that airs every Wednesday on EWTN. This week at 8 a.m. Central Time, we've got They Might Be Saints, Rhoda Wise. In Canton, Ohio, Rhoda Wise was well known as a mystic with many spiritual gifts and healing miracles, one of them experienced by Rita Rizzo, the future Mother Angelica of EWTN. I'll be relating her remarkable story. That's They Might Be Saints, Rhoda Wise, airing on January 8th at 8 a.m. Central Time. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Rob Judge, the Executive Director of the National Shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who listen to this show know that I love talking about saints and American saints in particular. And, of course, one of the great American saints is St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. And today is her feast day, January 4th. So we're so excited to shine some light on her life and talk about her beautiful shrine, the National Shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton. And we welcome back to the program today, Rob Judge, the Executive Director. Welcome back, Rob.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you back, and it's always a nice thing to reflect on the saints of the United States, and Elizabeth Ann Seton perhaps is one of the great ones to focus on at this time of year, especially. And I know that this year is a big year for your shrine. You'll be doing an exhibition starting today on her feast day, going throughout the year, and that is the One of Us exhibit. Talk to us a little bit about what is it about Saint Elizabeth Ann Seton that wants the shrine and otherwise to make her life known.
Absolutely. So you're absolutely right. This is a tremendous year for us at the Seton Shrine, probably one of the largest in our history, because we'll be celebrating the 50th anniversary this year of her canonization. The actual anniversary date is September 14th. She was canonized, of course, back in 1975. And, you know, this anniversary really gives us a chance to shine a light on her holiness, you know, and what led her to that. She, of course, was canonized after Vatican II, and a big emphasis of Vatican II, of course, was the universal call to holiness. Matter of fact, the papal bull, which will be on display in this exhibit, it actually starts off by saying that every human being is called to holiness. And we know she's a great example of that. So the exhibit is meant to tell the story of this significant milestone, but also really to highlight other saints that are on the way and to kind of challenge all of us that, you know, this is all of our calling to be with our Lord in heaven.
And of course, she's the answer to a trivia question and a point of great emphasis, of course, being the first American to be canonized. So the 50th anniversary of that is a big deal and definitely worth the celebration and the exhibition. So people should be excited to find out more about her. And for those people who don't know sort of the backstory of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, who was she? How did she live out her life of holiness? What was her work?
Sure. So she was born in 1774, right? So just 2 years before the founding of our country. She was born in New York into a very prominent Episcopalian family. So her faith was part of her life from very early on. She lost her mother when she was just 4 years old. So she experienced a fair amount of loneliness as a child. Her father loved her, but he was busy fighting yellow fever. He was the New York's first public health officer. She, of course, fell in love young, married Will Seton at 19, had five children very quickly. Then they had a fair amount of hardship in their life. And faith carried her through that time. Eventually, she was invited to Baltimore by the Sulpicians after the death of her father, after the death of her husband. And her entrance into the Catholic faith. I kind of skimmed over that, which is not insignificant. She was really the belief in the Eucharist that led her into the faith. But she came to Baltimore founded a school and the first community of women religious in the United States. And then her sisters literally went out over, you know, as the country grew, as the church in this country grew, her sisters established orphanages, hospitals all across the country, really teaching the faith. So her imprint is tremendous.
Wonderful. We've been talking today with Rob Judge, the executive director of the National Shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton. And her being the first American saint is significant. She lived in an era before today's modern age. How can we still see her today for her perhaps impact on the education system of the United States and also as a role model of faith for us, even in today's world?
Absolutely. So, you know, she saw education, especially as a means out of poverty for women during her time. And, we know today that education and the passing on of the faith and knowing our faith is paramount in the culture and the world that we live in. In terms of her faith life, you know, Elizabeth Seton's spirituality was characterized by, first, the love of the Eucharist. I mean, it was the Eucharist that led her into the church. When she received her first Holy Communion, her quote was, "At last, God is mine and I am his." Hmm. And she risked a tremendous amount because her family was Episcopalian. They were supporting her. And at that time, there was a lot of anti-Catholic sentiment. So Elizabeth Seton risked a lot to be able to receive the Eucharist. And it was really the Eucharist that fueled all the work that she did with the poor and with her sisters. She also, the other part of her spirituality that I'd emphasize is she had this tremendous belief in God's providence. Many of her sisters ended up naming hospitals after, you know, Providence Hospital, for example. But she just had this tremendous belief that no matter what happened in her life, that God could be sought, he could be found, that he would take care of her, that he had a divine plan for her. And I think in a world today where we all have so many difficulties and challenges, and faith is often challenged, her testament to, you know, God's providential care, that he has a plan, he wants us in heaven, he'll take care of us, is just a tremendous witness.
Wonderful. And for people who want to visit your shrine, they go to setonshrine.org for more information. What will they experience? What is the layout? What are the offerings of the shrine that a pilgrim might come and experience if they were to travel to the Seton Shrine?
That's a great question. You know, the Seton Shrine is actually the only place in the United States where you can visit the home of a saint. The shrine is on the grounds where Elizabeth Seton came in 1809 with her children. You know, back then it was extremely rural. She washed her clothes in Tom's Creek, which wraps around the shrine property. But you can visit the two houses where she lived, where she taught, where she founded the community, where she passed from this life to the next. You can be in those very spaces. We have tour guides that take people through. We also have a living history program on Fridays and Saturdays where we have actors who portray the early sisters and academy students, creating an experience of what life was like then. And then, of course, in addition to that, you can go through the museum. We have a brand new museum. It's 19,000 square foot, and it has all these original artifacts from her life, her baptismal gown, her habit is on display there, her rosary. And we use these artifacts to tell her life story. And then, of course, all that leads into the basilica, a beautiful basilica which seats 800 people. And she's entombed in the side altar there. So you can pilgrimage to the shrine and pray at her altar of relics.
Amazing. And for people who want to go online and find out more or any other resource you can offer, what's the best place that people can go to learn about the shrine and learn how to visit it?
Yes, absolutely. So the best place would probably be to start at our website, setonshrine.org. And there you can find information about all the events. You can find information, special information about the celebration year. You know, we're going to have a special weekend celebration on September 14th. The exhibit will be open all year. But we also have programming all throughout the year. And of course, we have the sacraments, Mass, and confession, adoration, 6 days a week. We also have a lot of resources on her life, so a lot of short videos. We offer weekly reflections where we compare and contrast her to a saint of the day. So just a lot of resources about her life, and we would love to have people visit, especially in this anniversary year, and make pilgrimage.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Rob Judge, the Executive Director of the National Shrine of the Elizabeth Ann Seton Shrine, or Elizabeth Ann Seton. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
Oh, thank you for having us, Michael, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. This has been Rob Judge. We've been talking to him about the National Shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton in the 50th anniversary of this first American saint, the canonization of this first American saint. Check out that shrine. You can visit it this year. You can go to setonshrine.org for more information. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio. Check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Rob Judge, the Executive Director of the National Shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton, and also Catherine Pittman Smith, talking to us about the Shrine of Our Lady of Prompt Succor. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. I travel to Paris, where the Virgin Mary appeared to St. Catherine Laboure in 1830, resulting in the most famous and widespread Catholic medal in circulation, the Miraculous Medal. And Explore with the Miracle Hunter is every Saturday at 5 p.m. Central Time. And check out my new pilgrimage to Rome coming up in July and August of this year. And that is, you can go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. We'll be going to Milan, Turin, Rome, and Florence to look at the places of saints and miracles. And of course, we'll also be going to the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati. Join me on that amazing pilgrimage. Go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth a hunt. Talk to you next week.